Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kabaza, and for today, we are going to be chatting, around a very interesting, concept. And I'm very keen to get a sense of what's going on in that space, talking about commerce media and, some of the happenings in that particular space. And we are joined by Gil Sperling, who is co-founder and co-CEO of Flow, and we're just going to get a sense of what's going on in that sector. Gil, greetings to you today.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Quick one, and I'm sure this is something that you've done on multiple occasions. What is the elevator pitch on Flow?
So Flow is a commerce media platform. And we enable retailers, marketplaces, and e-commerce businesses to monetize their audience and to provide access to brands who may want to target it through advertising.
Let's define what's meant by commerce media.
Sure. So commerce media is, it's a relatively new but significant shift in how digital advertising is working these days, and I think just to premise that, when I say shift, I think bear in mind that when 20 years ago there was obviously a massive shift from traditional advertising, TV, radio, newspapers, to digital, and generally that was in the form of search. Google built a massive search business, and that's and search and display when you run ads on publishers. They built a $30 billion business in, I think it was 14 years. The next big shift was social media. That's when you now have the ability as a brand to advertise to people where they spend a lot more time in a much more engaging way and far more targeted. I think Facebook took, 11 years to build a $30 billion business. And the next big shift is commerce media. So that's how we're considering how big it is. And to answer your question, what is it? Right. So it's the ability for a business, a platform, like a retail business, like a marketplace, any marketplace, to take its audience, its first party data, meaning their clients, their shoppers, if it's a retail, and package it in an advertising form so that their suppliers, everyone who sits on the shelf, can advertise to the shoppers. Why is that different? Is because before a brand, maybe let's use an example, right? So Unilever Dove soap, before you used to run an ad on social media and hopefully it translated to a sale at the retail shop. Today, they're able to run an ad to target Woolworths shoppers, who's one of our clients, people who bought soap before at Woolworths, drive them back to Woolworths to buy the soap, and we can completely measure everything, right? And that's what's called commerce media.
All right. Very interesting concept. And like you said, a little bit of a departure, from some of the approaches that have been, that have been there in the past. When you look at traditional print, or if you look at broadcast, it's almost a spray and pray approach. You almost throw as many ads out hoping to catch the right people or the people that you are intending to actually buy your product. But this sounds like an almost targeted approach, out there. You're a Woolies shopper, you may be interested in one of the products in the shop. One of the products in the shop gets advertised to Woolies customers that may be interested in that particular product. Am I understanding you correctly?
Exactly.
There?
Exactly right. Exactly. And all right. That manifests. So you're right. Underlying everything, it's really all about targeting. The targeting is so much more precise because Woolworths know so much about their shoppers that they now have an ability to place an ad in front of their shopper that is way more relevant. It's actually win-win because the shopper has a far more relevant experience with an ad. The advertiser gets a way better return on investment, and Woolies, never mind building now a media business, which is very profitable for them, but they're actually offering a better service to that supplier, to Dove Soap in that example, because not only do they stock them on the shelf, they allow them to reach the shoppers in a in an advertising way.
All right. One of the things I'm quite keen to get a sense on is when we talk about an audience or a customer base, one of the toughest things to get right sometimes from a business point of view is actually capturing, you know, the data of who these people are, especially when you are in a brick and mortar environment. If you're on the e-commerce platform, it's much easier. You know, you have emails and, you know, all of the stuff that is helping to link a particular business establishment to a specific customer. But if I'm frequenting Woolworths, you know, in and out, I don't have any, I just walk in there, I don't have any loyalty cards and stuff like that. Like, what is the approach in terms of actually getting to me? That's, as you were talking, that's the part where I was thinking to myself, I wonder how they get to that part. Or are we, you know, primarily saying that this is advertising that is going to primarily take into consideration online behavior and those types of data points, you know, where you can actually link that this is someone who has perhaps ordered from, you know, Woolies before, that type of thing. Like, maybe if you could take us behind the curtains around, you know, some of those mechanisms.
Yes, yes. So you can achieve it in both ways. The most ideal is when you actually have an identity for the shopper.
Yeah.
And the identity would be an email or a phone number. An email or a phone number, which is also how you can match them on their social media profile when you run an ad there, etc. So as you say, if you have a loyalty card, then you can match it. Then you can obviously offer that very – I think that's logical to everyone. The other way where you can do it is when you target a, you know, technically a session. So if you've spent time on the Woolies app or on the Woolies website and not logged in yet and just browsing certain categories, or even, you know, so first of all, you can't shop without putting in your details, but even just browsing, there's enough information captured in the session on the browser for an ad to be targeted at you. That's fundamentally how a lot of the digital advertising works, is that it's retargeting cookies, essentially. I think it's just one important point. Obviously, in both of those cases, it has to be consented and abide by all of the poppy regulations and so on. And consumers, you know, again, they consent to it and they enjoy the journey. But yes, there are certainly opportunities to target a shopper who has not yet purchased or registered for the loyalty programs.
All right. And when, let's use myself as an example. And we can just continue with the Dove and Woolies example. I am a big shopper at Woolworths, and I'm buying a number of different groceries and items there. And every once in a while, I am buying toiletries and that type of thing. If, you know, Unilever's on the other side of this equation, and to your earlier example around Dove, at what point, what am I doing when I get perhaps some type of a promotional message around Dove soap or, you know, something like that? Am I browsing the Woolies website? Am I just going about my normal life? Am I on social media? Am I, you know, receiving an SMS? At what point, you know, during my day or just my online interactions, am I having this messaging coming to me?
Yes. We deal specifically with what we call offsite advertising. What that means is that it's when you're on your social media, to answer your question. And the segments of targeting shoppers can be so precise that we can target someone who recently browsed the Woolies app or the website within a day even, and then show you products. right? So, and you know, you can go even more specific, browsed but hasn't checked out their basket, and show Woolies product. And you can also run ads directly on the Woolies website itself, which is called on-site. So when you do search for a certain category, let's say now you're buying a cereal and you search cereal in the search box, and you've got results that show, the result right at the top could be a sponsored result, which is obviously pushed at the top like a search algorithm, like with Google, and you can place it there. So the short answer to everything is that the ads that is shown to the consumer is probably at the point of the highest possible intent to buy the product, right? Whether it's on-site or off-site, it's relative to the other advertising forms that we discussed, it's the point of highest intent where I really do want to buy the product.
All right. Makes sense. Because I do understand the fact that there's probably a lot of work and research that's been done to actually see where such an interaction would be the most effective. And I guess, you know, to your point about, the point of highest intent, that's quite an interesting one. And it almost reminds me of the parallel when it comes to physical shops as well. You know, the placement of products in a specific shop, whether something is at eye level, whether something, you know, is something that is next to the till, or whether it's something that's right at the back of the shop, you know, all of those things. I'm drawing a lot of parallels between, I guess, that online experience and how, you know, retailers go about, placing certain products in a physical shop.
Yes, and that's actually it is a very good way of thinking about it. And what's happened now with the shift to commerce media is, you know, what you're describing has been around forever, right? So just the design of the shelf and highlighting the shelf and the gondola at the end and the tilt-top advertising, that is a form of retail media, which is like a subsect of commerce media. It's been around and brands are used to advertise to shoppers in that way. The difference, or rather the extension of it, is to do that online. And the opportunity to do it online is that you have access to that shopper for far longer, right? So generally, even if you walk in store, I don't know, maybe collectively you spend 30 minutes a month, you know, going in and out of Woolies because you visit it once a week to buy bread, milk, and then a bigger shop, whatever it is, 30 minutes, 1 hour a month you spend in store. You, that same person spends up to 3 hours a day on social media, right? And on digital. So when you target that shopper where they spend most of their time, you now essentially have created almost unlimited inventory. Where your inventory may have been a tilt-top advertising or shelf advertising, you've now expanded how else you can advertise to the shopper and target him throughout the journey as he comes to the transaction. So it really has expanded from the example that you mentioned.
You know, one of the most interesting things about the world of commerce today, yeah, right, is the fact that from a consumer point of view, consumers claim that they're tired of ads, tired of getting, you know, all of these marketing messages coming to them. But, you know, more and more as you look at the earnings reports of the Googles and the Metas and, you know, various platforms, you see that advertising as an area of business is on the rise, right? There's more and more inventory, there's more and more revenue being paid, there's more and more businesses that are using this, which means on some level, yeah, all of this is making sense, and it's actually working out. So keen to get your sense of, and I think you had already started talking about it, you know, around, you know, the 3 hours, how effective something like a commerce media is, you know, compared to that in-store experience that we're talking about earlier on. How do you think all of that then compares with, I guess, the normal ads that a person is receiving, you know, when they're browsing? Because To my understanding, based on everything that you've been talking about, in a normal sense, because a lot of the time you're looking at programmatic ads, people are, you've got algorithms that are literally bidding for an audience member in real time based on what they're doing. How is that, how does that, I'm even tempted to call it a now traditional way, you know, of how people approach, you know, advertising on social media. How does that compare to the commerce media? Because I'm sure that's the decision that our businesses are making, to be like, do I just go to Google and, you know, put my ads there and then hope that they find someone? Or can I go to Gil and team and, you know, hope that they will find me someone who's shopping at ShopRite, at Woolworths, or whatever the place is?
Yes, great question. I mean, first of all, you're right. These channels, their earnings and earnings per user and so on is only climbing. And the reason is because they are managing to provide a good user experience to the consumer browsing Facebook, right? And so that means that their algorithm, as you explained it, favors advertisers who are targeting relevantly and in turn are providing a relevant user experience to the users. And so, you know, users who are saying they're seeing ads everywhere, maybe on like publisher, you know, some publishers overdo it with ads, perhaps, you know, some advertisers as well, they over target you and you get irritated with the ad. Those ads actually don't perform then, and especially on platforms like Meta and Google, they would get penalized by the algorithm for being irrelevant or, you know, over advertising, and their costs would shoot up and then they would pull back, right? And then the consumer receives the user experience. So ultimately the user experience is managed by the algorithm. It favors everyone. You know, if you're a good advertiser, you have a good product, you're targeting correctly, the user's happy, Meta's happy, the advertiser's happy. And the difference of what commerce media brings in is more targeting, way more targeting. And so as a user, if you're used to the platforms providing you helping you create a better user experience through brands that want to reach you, this is more so, right? So on if let's use the same example, Dove Soap want to reach a shopper on Facebook, they can find a way to do it through interest targeting. You know, perhaps it's a mom who's at a certain stage of her life, at a certain age, who's interested in something that is more of a higher end product that probably means she buys Dove. You can infer that that's a right targeting. But what Facebook certainly don't have is Woolworths' transactional data about that mom. And therefore, you get a way more relevant targeting, right? So one, that's what commerce media brings. It not only that, it also brings the complete loop where you drive that person from the ad to the experience, to the product, to the point of sale. Right. And so it's not only the targeting, but it's the full execution of the campaign end to end, all the way down to sale. So that's really what it brings and how important it is. And I want to mention one more point, because we're kind of on the topic of the commerciality of all of this and you know, for these platform marketplaces and retailers, is that it's not only the kind of the core suppliers of a retailer or the core sellers of a marketplace that benefit by targeting the shoppers or the buyers, but it's actually also non-core clients. For example, you could have a property marketplace, you know, so people searching for listings, property listings on a property marketplace. And not only would this the real estate agents or the developers target those buyers in the same way, but so could home content insurers. Right. For example, that is another extremely relevant way to target people who are obviously in the market to buy a property or rent a property, who are in the middle of a move, and to offer them home content insurance is the best way to target them. So these platforms not only access the marketing budget of their core suppliers, but also what we call non-core adjacent brands, all the way from car brands to insurers to you name it. Right. So it really opens up the commerciality opportunity across the board.
All right. Now, certainly makes sense, you know, when you put it like that, a richer data set, a better ability to target, and also at the same time, people that are less likely to be perturbed by the, you know, by the marketing messaging, because they're usually in the market for certain types of things, or their buying behavior has shown, you know, that they're inclined.
Also probably
enjoy you know, to that type of thing. Curious to get your sense then, Gil. You said that this is a relatively, you know, fresh area when it comes to advertising. Where's South Africa on the, what you call this, on the, can I call it the spectrum, when it comes to adoption of commerce media? Are we the early adopters? Are we the emerging middle? Like, where are we? Are we sort of following what's happening in other parts of the world? Is South Africa trailblazing? Like, you know, where are South African advertisers when it comes to this?
Yes, no, so I would say we're behind.
Okay.
In South Africa, we're not the early adopters. You can look at the US and Australia actually as well. I found that both those regions are very progressive when it comes to retail media, which is great though, because there's precedent, right? There's about 5 years of precedent now on how it's done and how it works and how best to structure it and the benchmarks, you know, so we're not starting from scratch. And there's a lot of case studies for retailers and marketplaces who do want to come on board. You can take a look at even large retailers like Walmart in the US. They've got a program called Walmart Connect. And if you just Google it, I mean, that's a massive business. I mean, I think that last I saw, it's like a $4 billion revenue stream for them. Obviously, the US is massive, right? And you know, we're comparing it in that way, but it's significant. We're looking at it as Flow very closely. We do have clients in many regions, so we have the opportunity to experience it. But yeah, to answer your question, South Africa is in that adoption, that kind of laggard adopter. But I think we sense a very excited energy, and people embrace it. And the fact that we can bring global case studies makes the adoption far easier.
We've obviously spoken quite a bit around retail, and even the examples that you're giving, the US and Australia examples that you're giving, the likes of Walmart, that's a big retailer, probably, you know, the biggest retailer in the world. But keen to get your sense in the South African market from what you're seeing. Is it only retailers that are making use of this, or are there other industries, other use cases for it?
Yes, none at all retailers only. So we're seeing it. And again, the term commerce media is kind of all encompassing. Retailers have their own specific one called retail media, because they really were, that's where it all began. And commerce media works across the board of verticals. I can speak from our own experience that we've got over a dozen different partners on board, you know, these sort of platforms. And I can mention them actually, because it's obviously out in the public, and I think everyone will resonate with these brands. We've got the likes of Hello Peter, which is a business rating website where people go to rate businesses, but also to review businesses. And they've got, you know, they've got over 1 million consumers a month there who review businesses before they buy something. And what an opportunity for a business to target that person. So a ratings website, we've got Bike Hub, which is where you buy premium bikes, and you can imagine the types of audiences that buy these, you know, 50, 100 grand bikes. We've got Howler, which is an event booking platform. Dix Connect, which is a student accommodation marketplace, The Capital, which is a hotel chain and business travelers. So it really is any marketplace that has a substantial enough consumer base that engage, where you can identify the person, there is ultimately someone on the other side which sees relevance to speak to that consumer, and that consumer is expecting to speak to that supplier.
And do you find that it's because almost all the businesses that you've spoken about are, you know, relatively biggish businesses. Are SMEs also getting in on the game?
Yes. I think where it makes sense to participate in this, to activate it, is that you do have to have a sizable enough audience to move the dial, right? So there is probably an entry point. And of course, the nature of your business must be some form of marketplace where it's one consumer facing. I mean, even if it's business facing, you just need the volume, right? And, you know, just to throw some numbers around, once you have 200,000-300,000 people at least who are visiting your website, never mind registered and so on, even just the intent of visiting and browsing your website, this can be an opportunity that does move the dial for you.
Okay, cool. It would be an interesting one to see how it develops over time. I think that's one of the key things that I'm waiting to see. Like when we start seeing, you know, some of the numbers pulling through around the ways in which people are spending their advertising, where commerce media is going to fall as time progresses. I'm very keen to see how it's going to progress over time. And you and I have spent the conversation mainly talking about the benefits, you know, how it works, where South Africa sits, some of the global examples, how it's different from, you know, the typical online and social media advertising. And I think now what I wanted to switch to as we are almost rounding up is to say, business, if I'm a business and someone is listening to this and they are keen to get in on the game, they've understood the use cases, they've understood that this is, you know, where the world is likely going. You've almost hinted at some of the things that they have to have in place, such as 200 to 300,000 people visiting their website so that it starts making sense, that type of thing. What else does a business, you know, likely need to have in place if they want to, you know, go about monetizing some of this data?
Yeah, so I think one should consider it as two sides of the marketplace, the supply and the demand, right? So a business may be in a position where they feel that they have substantial enough supply, being substantial enough demand, rather, where they've got their consumers. And those consumers are browsing the website or registered or bought from them or whatever it is. And then on the other side of it, they have their supplier, which is the product that they sell to them. If that supplier are other suppliers, like, you know, those that you find stock the shelves at Woolworths or the bike manufacturers on bikeup.com or whatever it may be, bikeup.co.za, sorry. That's an important consideration, because ultimately, who is going to buy the ads from you? There are two types of brands that are going to buy the ads from you, which we discussed earlier. It's your core suppliers, right? So for Woolies, it's Unilever, Nestle, L'Oreal for beauty, et cetera, et cetera. You know, or Scott Bark or whatever it is for Barks.co.za, Barkup.co.za. And then it's all the other brands, like, you know, we spoke about the home content insurer for property seekers. I think that's important to consider. The other end of it for a business who's listening is that maybe you just have a marketing budget and you should consider running ads in this way rather than spending it with the broad targeting that exists on Facebook and Google. Maybe you can target some of these audiences via a platform like Flow, because that is available to everyone. So those are probably the two major considerations.
Traditionally, advertising has always been one of those areas that's sometimes, not always, but sometimes hard to determine how returns are actually being made. We alluded to the fact that back in the day, especially your print, radio, and television advertising, it was almost a spray and pray approach. and you almost hope that you are throwing an ad to a very wide net and hoping that inside that net you're going to catch the people that you are, you know, hoping. But online has helped to, you know, reduce some of that risk. Yes. And increase measurability, you know, with targeting, you know, the profiles and all of that stuff that you were talking about earlier on. When it comes to commerce media and something like this, you've laid out, you know, so how businesses can get into the game, you know, the supply side and the demand side, like what you're saying. Mm-hmm. What does the returns profile look like? You know, for something like this in a realistic sense, because yes. Not everyone is going to be able to make the $4 billion that Walmart is making, yes, like what you said.
Of course. Yeah. So on the extreme end, you know, massive retailers in the largest market in the world will make billions. In South Africa, practically, some of our clients, and which is probably the best place I can speak from, that have come on board that are using our platform to build their commerce media network are making all the way from 50 to half a million rand a month, right? So and you know some of them will be more. So it ranges, but perhaps that gives you a sense, right? So it's not 1,000 rand, right? It can move the dial, and then on the other end of it, it can be large depending on your size in the market.
All right. And what you call this, tied to that, for businesses that are keen to get in, one of the things that I'm curious to know is, and I think it affects more the smaller businesses, what form must this data be sitting in? Right? Mm. Because I think sometimes businesses don't really think about customer records in that way. Yes. If you have people that are shopping on your website, like I guess someone might be sitting there and saying, okay, fine, I'm hearing what Gil is saying, and I do have people buying from me, both in store. I have an e-commerce setup as well. Lots of people are buying from my, but like if I engage with Gil and team, like what do they want from me? Like, do they just want my sales records and history? Like, what is it exactly makes up this data that ends up being monetized?
Yes, good question. The easiest way to start without lifting too much is many businesses already have a tracking pixel for Facebook and for Google on their website because they would have probably run advertising with them. Our software is able to ingest that and create segments out of it, right? So actually, you just connect up some of your Facebook business manager and your Google manager, and you can already start trading, call it. Ideally, though, the data can come in multiple forms. So hopefully you have your transactional data in some sort of, you know, at best at some sort of CDP if you progressed, like a customer data platform. Otherwise, it could just be in a database, and we can find a way to ingest that. And just to mention, because I'm pretty sure people will have this question, is that everything, you know, again, data sensitive, and we're very mindful of that and very careful with that. And so, first of all, we can only deal with data that is consented by the consumers. And everything is done in an encrypted way. Ultimately, when it arrives on the Flow platform, if I use that example, it's already hashed and encrypted and jumbled up, but it's enough to create the targeting segments. But back to your question, traffic on a website, because you already have your tracking pixel, so easy way to start. But ultimately, wherever you have data, whether it's point of sale data, loyalty data, even delivery data, like, you know, if we keep using Woolies, Woolies Dash now has some more geographic data, and all of that can, there's a lot of plumbing that can be put in place, and segments can be created out of that.
Hmm. Okay, cool. Now that's good, because they often say that when it comes to some of these platforms, your output is only as good as the input. So it's at least good to know what some of that input would be. Gil, before we let you go, taking a step back, we started off talking about what Flow actually does, and you gave us a good sense. And I think through the conversation, we now have a firm understanding of what you guys are doing, your place in the market, and also the opportunity that you are seeing. But curious on a couple of points. Firstly, how long have you guys been in business for, and what is it that you saw initially that made you say, okay, fine, this is a business that we want to get into?
Yes. So even more of a backstory, which I think is relevant. I've been in ad tech for almost 20 years. Me and my partner, Daniel, we started another company, and we were Facebook's partner in Africa with the software that we developed that became performance marketing on these channels. So that's always been in our DNA. I think that probably helps that background. We started Flow about 5-6 years ago now. We actually started it with a different idea, and we pivoted during COVID. And we had over time realized that there are many, having come from where we come from, where we dealt with large brands and their big marketing teams and so on, we realized that there are many other businesses in other verticals and industries that don't have those marketing teams and don't have those capabilities. And we started building out ad tech that would assist those businesses to scale. In doing that and focusing on real estate, actually, we realized the opportunity of targeting those first-party audiences and understood also what was happening around the world with retail media and commerce media. And that was our direction. So that's really the short of it. There's obviously a longer war story there, but that's the short of it.
All right. The reason I'm asking the question is because we actually had your partner Daniel on this platform a couple of months ago, and yes, he gave us a sense of what was going on, especially with the property backstory and all of that stuff. But it's just interesting, getting backstories, around the same company from the different founders. Around there, because the perspective tends to be a bit different. So it's always great when you get to chat to the other person or the other people in a particular business around the inception and all of that.
I hope it aligns, but obviously I gave you a quick summary kind of coming to the end of it. But we've absolutely, as entrepreneurs, we've gone through a journey, call it, and through trying to create value, you obviously have to innovate, and that comes from experiencing what's happening on the ground and what clients actually want and what's lacking for them. And along the way, you build something and you try and understand the value that's extracted from it, and that evolution has really brought us to where we are. And there's a lot of trench war stories along the way for entrepreneurs, but we've, thank God, kind of come to a place where the platform has grown substantially, and it's we'd like to think that we've helped bring the commerce media and retail media shifts into the South African market and beyond.
One of the things I'm quite curious about when it comes to advertising businesses such as yours, as an ad tech business, is the funding aspect. Are ad tech businesses, because they tend to be capital light, are they the types of businesses that lend themselves to VC type of funding, or is it more a model where a person can realistically bootstrap and be able to make a mark or dent in the market?
I think it'll be very difficult to bootstrap, because we've invested millions into building the technology. We've got, ten developers and data people, like within our team of about 37 of us. We heavily invested in the technology to make this happen, and we have been VC funded. So we've raised around $7 million In our last round, it was a $4.5 million round as a Series A. And we're using that capital both for the development and the continuous development of the product and the growth. Through that, we've managed to already expand in multiple regions and grow quite substantially in South Africa. So very much as a tech based business, we went the VC route and made sure that we can grow the business in a meaningful trajectory.
All right. And then lastly, for maybe younger people that are coming into the industry and may be looking for possible opportunities, because what people call advertising sometimes gets overlaid or misconstrued, or all of that stuff with other words, marketing, communications, brand communications, all of these words that all sound like the same thing. And also within that, there are other things that people can do: social media management, brand building, the ad tech side of things. Today we're just talking about commerce media. Other people are developing assets, that go into brand communication, all of these things that fit into the space. For someone starting out in 2025, possible area, of opportunity, I guess what I'm asking is a low hanging fruit question, for someone starting out. They don't have the millions to be able to invest in a platform as you guys have, but they're looking and they are hungry. Yeah.
Marketing is broad. It is, however, at the very much progressive in its innovation and so on, and technology does play an important role. We obviously play in the paid ad, in the media part of it. And there's a lot of other trends, though. Just, I guess, if someone is curious, I think there's a content plays a very important role these days. And of course, you can imagine what AR does in that conversation and how it generates content at a far quicker rate, with far more relevance, with far more agility. That's also important for us, where the content that we generate as the ad is actually generated from the product feed of the retailer or the marketplace, the actual product sold in it. So we play a very key role in that, in the content generation, and where AR plays. But the content is key, and the channels, the big channels are still completely prevalent, the Googles and the Facebook. And ultimately, it's a media game and an advertising game. So if people, young professionals are interested, I think media will not go away. And this sort of advertising will always be a form of how brands can reach and communicate with consumers. Your advantage may be the tech route of it, the knowledge, know-how, and control of content probably is a strong thing. Influencers, for example, is a really big thing now as well, micro influencers. So a lot of these channels are moving in those smaller community sort of way, and not mass reach. So I think that's where someone coming into the space may benefit and may want to explore first. Hopefully that's helpful.
It certainly is hopeful and helpful. And that's where we end off today's conversation, just talking to Gil about what's going on in the world of commerce media. In essence, just talking about the fact that a lot of businesses sit on a lot of data around the people that are patronizing their businesses, people that are buying from them, people that are interacting with them, people that are buying, their products and services. And that is a resource that can actually be leveraged for people in their supply chain to actually reach and communicate with people on the other side of their supply chain. So in essence, if I am a retailer and I have the 200,000 to 300,000 people that are visiting, frequenting my website and the like, I can actually facilitate a world where you know, suppliers that are supplying myself can actually, you know, target and communicate with people that are buying from me, right? So you are sitting in the middle, and you can actually monetize, you know, this data that you're actually sitting with. Some of the big things that Gil was giving us a sense of is that this is a relatively new area when it comes to advertising technology, though, you know, it's been around for at least 5 years, and countries such as the US and Australia are certainly ahead of the curve on this, and South Africa has started, you know, getting in on the trend, but is still behind some of those global peers, which shows, you know, the possible opportunity that exists in that space. Also getting a sense of, you know, the size and scope of business that can actually do something like this. And he says that, you know, businesses across the board can actually get in on the game, but it needs to be something that actually makes sense. You need to have an audience.
Marketplace.
Yeah, you need to have the audience in place. You need to have the traffic and all of that stuff, you know, to make it happen. And then at the same time, have the people in the supply chain that are willing, you know, to engage and, you know, do business from that point of view. Also interesting to just get a sense, you know, of, you know, the business itself. They started it a couple of years ago, and Gil just giving us a sense that that him and his partner, Daniel, who's been on the platform, have been in the game for a long time, you know, so they also benefit, you know, from decades of experience with what they are doing now. So that's been it. We're in conversation with Gil Sperling. He is co-founder and co-CEO of Flow. Gil, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.